Hello, and welcome to this month's episode of the Women of Color Empowered Show. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and Incandescent TV. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. The host of the show is amazing Kimberly Lee Miner, who is the CEO of the Women of Color Retail Alliance. Today, our guest is an amazing bombshell. Brandis Daniel is the CEO and founder of Harlem's Fashion Row and the nonprofit Icon 360. You are going to learn all about this truly amazing woman. So take it away, Kimberly.
Thank you, Hope. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited for this conversation. Brandis and I, we met, but then I think we met earnestly at the WWD 50 Women of Power. And I remember walking in and I was like, oh. Because I didn't really know a lot of people. That wasn't really like, you know, I lived in New Jersey. I worked in New York, but I worked. And I didn't have a network necessarily, I would say, who were in my industry. But I had seen Brandis. And then I had done your sustainability program. And I just like, she's beautiful and so friendly. And because I had met a lot of people. Like, and that's why I guess I don't have that circle, because I met a lot of people, of women in particular, who had a certain echelon, like if going to different events, but they weren't really warm. They weren't opening. And after the sustainability, and then when I walked in the room and I saw you standing there in that beautiful pantsuit, and I walked over to you and I was like, Brandis, you know, it's Kimberly. And she's like, I know who you are. Great to see you again. And it like warmed my heart. And then I think I reached out to you about something. You're like, you should reach out more often. And I was like, this is what it's supposed to be. Yeah. Like, Brandis is the incarnation of what it's supposed to be and what it looks like when you are empowered yourself so that you can then open the door to empower other people. And so to welcome you here to this conversation, just, I feel blessed. And so thank you for your time. Thank you for your kindness. And thank you for your vision.
I feel like I just walked into your house. I'm sitting on your sofa. I've taken my shoes off. We have a glass of wine. Thank you so much. Oh, that was such a warm welcome. Thank you, Kimberly.
Yes. And so what we talk about is how empowered women can empower women. And so you're the founder of Harlem's Fashion Row, which I think, I don't know anybody, whether they're in fashion or not, who doesn't know what that is. But I'd love for you to kind of take us on your journey. I know you started in traditional retail. So how did you find that? What was that thing in you that said, something's missing and I'm going to be the one to find it and to make everyone know about it?
So, you know, what's funny is that I feel like I stumbled upon Harlem's Fashion Row. I always tell people, like, I wish I had this story where I had like this strategy and I like made this business plan. And then I like started along the journey of the strategy, but that's really not true. I moved to New York from Memphis in 2005 and I knew that I wanted to work in fashion. At the time I was a buyer for Catherine's. And which is a plus size women's store for those who don't know. And I knew I wanted to do entrepreneurship. That was the goal for me. But my big dream and vision at the time was like, I want to own like a menswear boutique. That was my big goal. That was my big dream. Outside of that, I really wanted to work for a luxury brand. That was the other piece. And so when I came to New York, I worked in apparel production, which is like the opposite of like the glamorous side of fashion. Oh. It's like the most unglamorous side of fashion is how do you get the things actually made? But I found that I really loved production. Like I loved it. I loved I still keep in touch with our people in the factory in Asia, made lots of really great friends, fell in love with several countries in Asia, still one of my favorite places to go visit. But I was trying to figure out like, where's my place? There's a reason I'm in New York. There's something I'm supposed to be doing. I just don't know what it is. And I was living in Harlem, very involved on the social scene in Harlem. I am absolutely an extrovert. And so me and my friends were hosting like these like huge house parties at our home with like 200 people in our brownstone. Everybody had to dance or you got put out. And then I was hosting like Harlem brunches with like young professionals there. meeting lots of people in the neighborhood, but I hadn't gone to like, I had not gone to like a really dope fashion event in Harlem, even though there were all of these really cool boutiques that were popping up. There was like Bioyama, which was like this menswear atelier, really well-made suits. He was just really particular about fit. And so he was popping up. Montgomery was there, Denim Library, which imported all this really cool Japanese denim, like high-end denim based right in the heart of Harlem. Then there was Pieces. So there were all of these things that were happening around fashion, but I didn't see any shows. And so a friend and I went to a fashion show in Brooklyn. And while I was there, the idea hit me, I want to do this in Harlem. And that is really how HFR started. And I knew that, okay, I want to do this in Harlem. We've got all these really cool stores. They should be the ones that are part of this. But then it was, how do I convince them? Because, you know, what have you done in fashion, right?
And so hard in New York, because yes. Right, have you done fashion? Have you done Fashion Week? Have you done this? To have a line and be in New York or have a store in New York, and you know this, it takes so many hurdles because your feelings have been hurt several times because you didn't get the funding or you didn't get, or somebody made a promise. And so here you come with your beautiful smile and they're like, okay, what else? Like, what have you done lately?
and I didn't have an answer. I really didn't. But I had one thing going for me, and that was I was volunteering at Bioyama's menswear atelier because remember I thought I wanted to open a menswear. So every weekend I was just going there volunteering, like, and he would pay me in like a shirt here and there or whatever. And I just said, I just want to know what it's like to own a boutique. So just let me come and work. And so I was working, you would have thought I was getting paid. So he was the first person to say yes, because we had a relationship. So that's what I had going for me. So I had one yes, and then I could use that yes to kind of like trickle along the other yeses. And so when we did that first event, that was in 2007, along the path of actually planning that event, the vision was becoming very clear to me of what this was going to be. Mm-hmm. I actually still have my notebook from then in my basement. And so I thought I was planning a fashion event, but the vision for what this was going to be was coming, and it was way bigger than the fashion show. It wasn't until our second year, when I did the second show, I was actually looking for Black designers and I couldn't find them, that I realized like all the pieces started coming together. And so I started going down department stores' websites and realized at the time that less than 1% of the designers on these websites were Black designers. And Kimberly, it made me angry. It made me sad. I couldn't talk about it without crying. I mean, literally, people still talk about the fact that I used to cry all the time talking about this.
Less than 1%. That's ridiculous.
It was heartbreaking for me. And you know, I think that's when you know kind of you found your thing, because other people hear and they go, yeah, that's messed up. But for me, it was like, it broke my heart. Like, and so I was like, this, it was almost like I was looking around like, does anybody else know that this is like a real problem? And so I researched, looked at the U.S. Census, and I'm like, how much do we spend? At the time in 2007, we spent $22 billion a year on apparel. Mm. That made me even more angry.
Of course.
And so I was like, wait a minute, you mean to tell me we're spending $22 billion a year on apparel, but we represent less than 1% of the designers who are found in the department stores where we shop all the time? How is this the case? And that was for me when it was like, right. That's why it was never about that fashion show ever. But that was for me, it was kind of like this passion for doing this thing in fashion with this problem. And I felt like that's sometimes where your purpose intersects. And that's what happened for me for sure.
Well, the story is amazing. And of course, when you think about the fact that we spend so much, because it's historical, right? Because of where our people came from, it was so important for us to be presentable, right? Sunday was very important. So many were so poor, but they had that beautiful dress or they had that perfect suit, and looking good was value. Like it gave us value. And so that has continued through the generations. And so looking good, feeling good. The problem though has been that we've done it at our own demise, in that the sense that we wanted to look good, when we had those Black communities where we could sell our own goods and we could create and we had designers, then that went away. But we still wanted to look good. And so we disproportionately spend our money in white stores and organizations, but don't know that that money is not going to anyone who looks like it. You know, I had this conversation yesterday with Lydia Smith, and we were talking about the disconnect between certain brands, right? Because we were trying to get more retail talent into those brands so that they can then bring in those designers and make sure that they're successful. Right. And you're working to get the designers in. And there are people who don't question, don't care. They just shop. And you think that now in 2024, people would move forward and they'd say, hey, where's my money going? Why aren't there more people that are reflective looking at me? But we were talking because I have been talking to a retailer and he said, you know, I don't know why you're pushing for this. Women of color overrepresent our shopping base. So they don't care that we don't have designers and we don't have talent that looks like them. And I think, you know, you talk about it makes you angry. It makes me angry every day. and I can't find the soapbox big enough to say, hello, look, Harlem's Fashion Row was created because we didn't exist in these spaces.
Yeah.
But you continue to spend money. I don't even know how we get it out there, but I think that's what Harlem's Fashion Row is doing in addition to creating these pathways for designers. I think it's drawing people's attention to the fact that the reason you are creating this pathway is because there was not one, you know, like that empowerment and understanding your purpose is hard to find, but you're mining for diamonds to make a difference, which is so cool. And then you went from, because what this is 15 years, right? 15 years?
We're 17 years this year.
17 now? That is amazing. And you have, so help me with this one. So you have a book.
You have a book.
Podcast. Yep. You tell everybody.
Yeah, we have several events that we do throughout the year. Our big event is during New York Fashion Week in September. We have a designer retreat that's actually coming up. And next week, you were a part of our Black History Month event, which was you. I mean, y'all, she left so many mic drop moments during Kimberly's presentation. We do collaborations with brands. Our latest collaboration was with HSN. We have another HSN coming up, and we have Nordstrom actually coming up as well. We do pipeline programs. So we work with HBCUs to partner them up with brands to really help to strengthen their fashion departments as well. And then we do brand strategy. So if a brand comes to us and they're already working with another Black designer outside of our network, and they come to us and say, hey, how can we work together to kind of amplify this? That's what we're doing right now with Hugo Boss and Naomi Campbell's collection. So we work with them on brand strategy too.
That's awesome. And so how did you get from there? Because that's more than the full-time job. How did you find the time, I guess, or the space to then say, oh, we need Icon 360?
I didn't, Kimberly. I had no plans. Like, I knew we would start a nonprofit in this decade. So at the end of 2019, I had a decade planning party with my family and whoever else would come, like at my mom's kitchen table in Memphis. Awesome. And part of my decade plan was that I'm going to start a nonprofit in this decade. But I was thinking like further down the line. And then the pandemic hit. And then designers start calling me, or I was calling designers to check in on them. And very established designers were saying, Brandis, I don't think I can keep my doors open. I went from making, you know, $10,000 a week or a month to like nothing. And I was like, I got to do something. Like, it's urgent to do something now. And I was going on these walks in my parents' neighborhood, probably four walks a day to keep my sanity. And on one of those walks, like sometimes things just like drop in my spirit. And one of those was like, you need to start this nonprofit now. And so I went back to my house. I'm like, how do we launch? Because, you know, events is what we do. How do we launch a virtual event, bring in everybody I can think of from fashion to speak at this virtual event, and raise money to give money to the designers? And so we ended up doing this big virtual event. We had about 50 speakers at this event, and we raised, I think, about $20,000 that we gave to designers. And then a week, maybe 2 weeks after that, I got a call from the CFDA that said, hey, we have, you know, $1 million and we want to donate it. We saw the event that you did. We saw this nonprofit you started, and we want to donate that money. Us and Vogue want to donate that money to Icon 360. And that was really a game changer, because we were able to give out 27 awards to designers from like $100,000 down to $15,000. That was really a lifeline for so many designers that needed it at the time. And then we started to just get more donations in. And so I always say Icon 360 was like, it was building a plane in the air, because I'd never done a nonprofit, right? So I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was, you know, figuring out, calling people, asking, like, how do I do this? Like, you know, getting a 501c3, like all of the things. I mean, we got that donation before we even had our 501c3. Yeah. And to the CFDA's credit, like, they said, we'll wait, we'll hold the money until you get the 501c3.
Wow.
So they held the money for us for like 2 months, because it took about that amount of time to get it. So it was, and since then, it's been this.
It's grown.
It's just grown over time. And we have a really, really small but mighty team for Icon 360. And I'm excited about where it's going to go, because we want to keep funding HBCU fashion departments, and we want to keep providing grants to designers.
Well, I think that's awesome. I mean, we were actually together last week.
Yes.
At one of those HBCUs, and it was so amazing. Funny story. So my son, who goes to Morehouse, which is right across the street from there, he came because he was like, Mom, I've never seen you present, right? So he came, and he's going to be so mad. But he said afterwards, he said, I've been sleeping on Clark Atlanta. What? There's so much creativity in this room, and fly sisters, and what? Right? He was like, I had no idea that this was happening right across the street. This is so cool. And he was talking to some of the instructors, and he's graduating. He's like, I missed all of it. I missed all of it. I'm going to tell everybody I know. He said, because Icon 360 is so important. And every student he spoke to was like, yeah, without them, we wouldn't have this. And so understand, oftentimes people don't know how to communicate that. They don't hear, they don't know who to say it to, but they're saying it to each other. So Wow. That's how meaningful it is, what Wow. You're doing.
And I hate I didn't get to meet him one-on-one. I saw him sitting and you introduced him, but I wish I should have stayed in the room so I could meet him.
Well, he's something. And he put on his suit for his mother.
He did.
I said, you look
so nice.
But so what Icon 360, as you are working with these fashion students and you're creating this pipeline for interns, this is where you and I have talked about how it's almost a handoff. Right.
Absolutely.
You get them in, and then the WOC Retail Alliance is there to take their hand to ensure that they don't get caught up in the broken rung and all those other cliffs and isms and all those things that exist to make it difficult for young people of color to succeed and to thrive as they move forward in this world. And, you know, I don't think enough is understood on the depth of how deep it goes, right? But like you, where you found out that it was less than 1%. In 2007, when I had the original idea for WOCRA, I had done some research with NRF. And I was a VP at Ann Taylor. But at that time, VPs of color were less than 1%.
Wow.
And I understand innately that feeling you had. Because it's like, I don't even exist, but I'm working my ass off every day for somebody else. This has to give, something has to change. So, I mean, we could have this conversation all day. I know we have limited time, but I understand that feeling you had, because I personalized it and I understand completely.
It's a burden, actually.
It's a burden.
It becomes like this burden, and you feel like I have to do something that will contribute towards the solution. Like, I don't have a choice.
I don't have a choice.
Something.
Right. And I don't know, you don't know, like when you walk down that path, you don't know if it's going to work or not. And so
you don't know, I have no clue.
You have no idea. No clue. You're like, oh, I was supposed to do that. Oh, okay. I'll try it over here. I don't people, but when people look at you, right? And they see you are together all the time, like you are on point, you're beautiful, and you did it, they don't realize the path that it took, the pain that it took, the burden that you had to take on for it. You have a family. What do you have to sacrifice to be here for other people? They don't understand any of that. And so if there is one hurdle that you would share that you overcame, what would that be?
I think it was figuring out how to fund this. When I started HFR, it was such a purpose-driven thing, which I think is great. But if you're going to, even if it's going to be a business or nonprofit, it really doesn't matter. Either way, you have to know how you're going to sustain it. Because, you know, in the beginning I had volunteers, but people aren't going to volunteer forever. And by the way, like, I have to take care of myself too, you know? So I think figuring out like the revenue stream for HFR was the hardest part for me. It was, you know, I'd heard about brand partnerships, but how do they work? And how do I convince a brand to actually pay us money for things? That was the biggest hurdle for us. I think when we first started, we didn't have a lot of fashion brands. We had other brands who actually supported our event. So it was like Coca-Cola was a partner for us, Smartwater, Marriott, Prudential. Like, it was very non-fashion brands because fashion, they just weren't that interested. And so I always say to people now, when you're going to start a business, even if it's something that you're so passionate about, like, at least understand the pathway to bring in revenue for that, because what you're doing won't be sustained without that piece. Like, you have to have the revenue piece in order to sustain the mission. So that was the biggest challenge for me in the beginning.
That's always a challenge for your designers. It's always. Yep. A challenge. And so as we're closing up, what is the thing that you want everyone to know? Like, what piece of wisdom that maybe you didn't know, that as you have gone down this path and built this muscle of just fabulousness, what is the one thing you would leave us with?
Okay, so I'm going to do this for entrepreneurs. You had asked me a question about mentorship, right? And a lot of times I had a lot of mentors, but none of my mentors own businesses and has scaled a business, right? And so they were great. They were amazing. They gave me great advice. But it wasn't until I found a mentor who had bootstrapped her business from zero to millions that I started to grow as a brand. That was such a game changer for me. I had met her. She had spoken at a conference that I was a part of. And I reached out to her one day, very honestly. And my email to her said, "Hi, Tiffany. I am, you know, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm Brandis. I am excellent at execution. I'm horrible at making money. Can you have a 30-minute conversation with me to share with me any wisdom that you have around this?" We got on a phone call. She talked to me for 2 to 3 hours in that phone call. She is still, to this day, my go-to person. And so when we experienced kind of like our first like million-dollar year, I always attribute it to my relationship with her, because she helped me to unlock so many things in terms of mindset, in terms of my approach. She helped me see what was possible. She made me read books that I had never read before. And so a lot of times, like, we go to the smart people, right? Because my girlfriends are bad. They are corporate baddies. So I was going to them, and they were great, but none of them were entrepreneurs. And it is very different being a corporate baddie and when everything you make, you have to go out and get yourself. Those are two different worlds.
Two different.
So I always say to people, like, find somebody who's like 3 to 4 steps ahead of you. And one of the things I did with her, I had that conversation with her, but then I knew she'd like to walk. Mm-hmm. I would drive from Brooklyn all the way to Newark and say, "Can I walk with you once a quarter?" I would leave my house at 7 a.m. in the morning, tell my husband and my child, I'll see y'all later, drive all the way to Newark and just walk around this pond with her. And while we were walking, I was just learning so much because she loves to talk and give. And so I was just absorbing all of her wisdom on these walks. And then I would go back. And then the next quarter, I say, when can we go for our walk again? So it was very intentional around like, let me be in your space. Let me breathe your air. Let me hear what you have to say. Let me like glean some of your wisdom. Cause I would barely talk when we walk. I just listened. I was just there to listen and learn. But that relationship was really, really, really game changing for me as just a businesswoman and an entrepreneur, and helped me to see like what was possible and just introduced me to so many different things and ways of thinking.
Thank you. Thank you for that, because there are so many lessons in that. A, you need a mentor, but you need to know what you need from that mentor. B, you need to be open to have those conversations, and you developed a relationship. It wasn't just a, can you tell me this? It was like, I met you here. I want to get to know you. And the fact that you put yourself out to drive, that's a long drive from Brooklyn to Newark. And you went there with the purpose of connecting with her, but also how much you were open to learn. And oftentimes I think people think they have a vision and they want you to tell them how to make that vision, as opposed to being open to what the vision could be by learning. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing your time today. This has been amazing. And I'm going to be calling, because you know, I'm always asking questions. So I'm going to be calling you.
Anytime. And
thank you. This was amazing. People are going to, they're going to be talking about it for a long time. So they've learned a lot from you. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ladies, this was great. Brandis, wow, just amazing. We can't wait to see what you're going to do next and how this is all going to evolve. So you'll have to come back, right? And give us
absolutely whatever you need me back.
Yep. And we're going to publish some of your answers to Kim's 10 questions so that people can glean some more insights from you. So thank you so much, Brandis Daniel, CEO and founder of Harlem's Fashion Row and the nonprofit Icon 360. And of course, amazing, truly amazing, Kimberly Lee Miner, who is the CEO of Women of Color Retail Alliance, and of course, the host of the Women of Color Empowered Show. I'm thrilled to be here with you. Hope Katz Gibbs, the producer on Incandescent Radio and Incandescent.tv. And you can now hear us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. So thank you, ladies. And we know that everyone is absolutely going to appreciate your insights.